From the 89.1 WBOI studios in Fort Wayne, Indiana, this is WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and thank you for joining me. Last year, Advancing Voices of Women hosted 6 District City Councilwoman Sharon Tucker and friends at an outdoor event at Bar Street Market to discuss issues of racial justice in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd. A lot has transpired since, but what has and hasn't changed? George Floyd, 1 year later, an uncomfortable conversation with Sharon Tucker and friends. Special thanks to Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing AVOW events in our community. And special thanks to Luke Hollinger for providing audio for this program. And a note, this conversation was recorded outdoors. During some parts, there may be some additional noise. Just keep that in mind if you are listening while driving. Patty Hayes will introduce the event in a moment. Please enjoy the show.
Now, almost a year later, we've seen a lot happen, and we've tried to bring together not everyone, but a lot of who were with us that first day to try and check in and see what has transpired in that year's time. So let me start by introducing to your left is Chanel Love. My favorite story from our last civil conversation was with Chanel, that she sat here and spoke so eloquently representing her generation that in the crowd, a couple people were extremely moved and said, how do I help her get more involved in the community? And they sponsored her going through Leadership Fort Wayne. You're about ready to finish Leadership Fort Wayne. And I hope you get a chance to share a little bit with us tonight. Chanel is a photographer and continues, I hope, seeing a successful business blossom. Next to Chanel is Nicole Corey. We were hoping for Kim Burnett Johnson. Sorry, Nicole, we're really glad you're here, but she's filling the seat for Kim Burnett Johnson. And if you haven't followed, Kim was here last year. Today was her first day in a brand new role as chancellor for Ivy Tech. So we are, even the dog liked. We have Nicole here, maybe the next chancellor for Ivy Tech, sitting yet here. No pressure. Nicole Corey has been with Ivy Tech for 7 years, and she's on faculty for human services. Prior to that, she was with Trine, but she has an impressive educational background, starting with IU and then Liberty University, and we hope for us to be able to call her Dr. Corey. Moving on down is Paulette Nellums, and we saw Paulette last year representing District 3E with East Allen County School Board. School has its challenges again this year, and I think we're going to hear some continued stories with that as well. Paulette is past president of the NAACP of Fort Wayne, an early childhood teacher, and I enjoyed reading that she was part of a candlelight vigil earlier this year with too many victims. I hope we can touch on that tonight too. And then next to Paulette is Sharon Tucker. Does she need any introduction? She got this group started about a year ago. She represents 6th District on Fort Wayne City Council and has been championing economic development with the project Activate Southeast. Again, a really wonderful initiative that wasn't in place last year. Previously District 1 County Councilwoman, and Sharon's background is with a BS in management and then decided to get another BS in HR from Indiana Tech. She's on the AVOW board and was faculty with our recent AVOW Campaign Institute. We're going to start with these four with a big round of applause.
So you guys, we wanted to bring back the majority of Delois, we need to mention that Delois McKinley, for those who are wondering, like, where is Dee? Because Dee was with us last year. Today is the first day of Fort Wayne Community School System. And since Dee is still part, very involved in the schools, she wasn't sure if she would be able to be here. She told me no. However, I said, nope, I'm going to leave a chair for you just in case you decide to roll on through. So if she comes in, we will welcome her with loving arms. But we absolutely understand the challenge that she has with the schedule for today. And if the event that it does start raining, we've asked the Lord to just hold it off for us. But should he know wiser things than us, we will just ask that you help pick up all the electronic stuff so that it doesn't go bad first, right? We can always dry off and keep our hair dry. No, I'm joking. Look, the sound guy's like, no, don't touch my stuff. Like, just leave it where it's at. It'll be fine. So before we had a comfortable, uncomfortable conversation about the death, the murder of George Floyd, and here we are, 1 year later, and we wanted to look back and reflect back on life for those of us in Fort Wayne and for those of us who were on the panel last year to try to say what has changed, right? Has anything, in your opinion, let's start with life, like your personal life, and then we'll go further out. So let's go for a micro. What do you think, Chanel, for you, a year later, do you feel like has changed?
I personally think everything that happened with George Floyd, not only did it open my eyes, but everyone around us. I think it brought awareness and a level of understanding from every playing field. I think there's a lot of stereotypes that people have about police officers or public safety officers. And so with that, the things that have happened over this year is we had more open dialogues and conversations with them to understand their roles and rules. And even our police department here in Fort Wayne, they've told us a lot about different programs that they have, their training skills that they have prepared us for. So it makes you more comfortable living in Fort Wayne. And so that definitely has changed and brought me more aware and more comfortable to be in the city of Fort Wayne.
For me, personally, things have changed in the conversations that I have with the people that I see in my classroom every day. They wanted to have more in-depth conversations. In human services, we talk about the loss and the grief and how things affect them. And we talk to the students in regards to what do they see themselves doing next. Because I have a mixture of students that come in. I have high school students and adults. So personally, I've seen the conversation change where people are not only asking the question, but stopping to hear the answer.
What the George Floyd situation did for me personally, I guess the only word that I can really think of is exposed. It exposed a lot of ugliness, and it exposed, even in myself, I had to search my own self and say, you know, how can I become a better person, and how do I be the change that I want to see? And so my degree is in early childhood education, but what I did is I saw a need with our seniors. And oftentimes, a lot of them are in homes or apartments by themselves. So what I'm doing now is making sure that it's funny how my early childhood degree now is really paying off working with senior citizens, because getting in and doing activities with them and keeping their minds open. So it just changed how I viewed the world.
Are much nicer than I am, because I think for me it changed how I feel about folks.
How so?
About people, because I found myself nervous to go out amongst people, not sure how I would be received, mm-hmm. not sure how their behavior would be. And then I saw myself internally wondering if they're looking at me trying to see how I am going to react to them. And so it made me go, no, I care more about people than to shy away from folks. Like, I really became introverted and just want to stay at home. Mm-hmm. And even turned off the TV, because seeing the images and the conversations and the hate on one side and the love on another side, it just all started to cause so much anxiety that I'm like, you know, I just want to shrink away from it as much as I could. I know that's hard for y'all to believe, but like, it really did, because you start to go, where do I fit? Where do I fit in this space?
Because those conversations are difficult to have, and you want to say, hey, I don't really want to put myself out there. So we kind of, there's two sides. There's that personal side where I know what I think, and I'm going to say, keep those thoughts to myself, and I know what I need to say to you.
So we have this whole, we're going to take this one level from ourselves, right? Because when you think about the George Floyd death, and it created tons of protests, tons of emotion, tons of feelings that came out, right? I'm circling this back around to where we were. And when you are in the middle, you see all these young people with so much energy and so much frustration.
Yes.
And we talked about that last year. Remember, Chanel? Where do they put this energy? Where do they put that frustration? Where groups were formed, and there were questions and demands that were given. And now a lot of these young people feel like their questions, their demands have never been answered. And you can tell that by looking at the crowd.
Absolutely.
Because last year we had so many young people that were here with us. What do we say when we sit here and we and the question is, how did it change us? What do you think, how did it change for our community when we talk about our young folks and the impact that it had on them? And then to feel like their voice hasn't been heard. And I know you see young people all the time. So
I do. But, you know, I think sometimes they get caught up in the moment. And I think it really is not a moment. At that point, it was more of a movement that they were talking about. But I think they get caught up in the moment. And when our young people feel like they haven't been treated justly, I think sometimes they just retreat and they act out in totally different ways. But I do know that I found my own self personally talking to my grandson saying, you know, it's constant. If he leaves, I'm like, you know, call. And if you encounter this, don't say anything. And even in class, I said, if conversations come up that's political, just be quiet. But I really don't want to be quiet because I'm not a quiet person. I talk about issues, but I found myself saying that. So I wonder if other parents are thinking like I am, saying to their sons and their young daughters, you know, just be quiet. Things will shape the way that they're going to shape.
Do we want them to be quiet, though?
No.
No.
Well,
absolutely for, not. For the no. students no. in my classroom, I had two paradigms going. As a parent, I was like, be quiet. But my children, who are all grown, thank you, Jesus, they were like, Mom, no, we can't be quiet. This is our time. So we had this paradigm where the parents were, be quiet, stay in the box. And we had these students that said, no, I want to stand up. Or these children, I call children because I'm 52, that stood up and said, no, this is our time to finally speak our truth, to finally say, hey, this is what I want out of what you're doing. I think that you're wrong here. I think you're wrong here. And I think you're wrong here. They're speaking, but I feel that in some instances, they don't have a clear direction. They're saying, hey, see me, hear me, feel me. But they're going about it in some instances the wrong way. So I believe that we need direction in some areas.
Okay, so Chanel, you know.
Yes.
Tell us how you feel.
So I think it plays in two parts. One, I think us as kids and then now being young adults, because we're not kids anymore. Majority of people that I knew that were out there, we're young adults. You know, we are going into the stages of setting our place of how we're going to live our lives. And I think it's difficult for us because for so many years we've been taught stay in a child's place or this is adult matter, but it's not, because this affects us as well.
Right.
And I think just like, you know, what you said, it is our turn. And so that's kind of the conflict, because I think more of the time it's, oh, let's put them on a panel so they can just express themselves. But it's more than that. Like, I appreciated being a part of this opportunity. It wasn't just a panel, because then I got the opportunity to be a part of leadership for Wayne, and now I'm in a room of diverse people coming from different companies and places. And so I think it's better when we're investing in them and putting them in these places to act and participate more than just speak, because then it just feels like I'm just saying words and I'm just saying these things, but nothing's being changed for my benefit on what I'm actually expressing.
So you say that we're missing the component that I'm expressing, that component that guides them, directs them, helps to shape their mindset to say, hey, this is the direction that you need to take. So there's a component, there's a missing click. Like when I was growing up, my grandmother was there, my mother was there, and then I had an auntie that would step in, and auntie would say, hey, I'm the fun person. You can have a good time
with
me.
That's me, cool Aunt Shay.
And then there's mom, she's giving direction, and then there's grandma who's reinforcing the direction. So we're missing that middle part. We're missing that component that helps to guide that child to the next step, that this is what you step for.
What happens, though, when all of those components are in place, right? All of those components, all of those safety nets are in place, and the young person, because I want to be careful that we don't put it on the young folks, right? That the issue is the young folks, because we're talking about all the passion, all of the frustration, all of the concern, all of the change that was wanted, specifically because of the frustration of Black lives being taken in the streets, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our young people took to the streets for many, many days.
Absolutely.
In the month of June, mm-hmm. in protest of this frustration. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to say, how do we communicate to them as adults and thinking adults in this room that we hear your voice? So Chanel, when you mm-hmm. went, how do we communicate that to them, especially as us as adults, when we go, I hear you, but I really don't even know how to impact the change that you want to see changed.
See, I think part of it is, like you say, you keep giving them those opportunities for them to grow and expand and to express themselves. And if you feel like it comes from a place that they might not fully get the bigger picture, you bring them to the table to understand that. I think the opportunities that I've been put into are like, you know, even working in a law firm, I know how to go about certain things. Just like you can't do everything out of anger and think, you know, lashing out or vandalizing will get your answers heard. And so you have to do it in a professional stance. And I think if that's taught to them and even giving them that opportunity to continue to have programs and plans for them to participate in, it helps them to know that you guys, one, care. And then two, I have these opportunities. It would be my choice and my disservice to not participate.
I just wonder, from the educational standpoint, how do we incorporate this into the learning environment before they graduate? What can schools do to really
can
make sure? Yes.
What I would love to see happen, and this kind of lets you know how old I am. Back in the day when I was in school, I was in middle school, they had these programs where you got to learn a skill, a task. CETA is what it was called. I learned how to work in a nursing home. I learned how to hang drywall, and I learned electricity. Can I do that stuff now? Not really. But it brought me to the table. And I was a youth that did not have that table. I didn't have that ability to learn some of the things that are available to us now. So this is a program that we no longer have. It's something that we need, something like that, where we bring youth out to learn.
How will that help create opportunity and diversity and the understanding of their anger from the George Floyd protests? Because we're talking about 1 year later, and mm-hmm. what do we think we've seen change, right? Do you think that that program would create community change?
It could possibly create community change, because this adult, young adult, is learning. Most of the anger is coming from the fact that I don't have the money to do what I need to do. I can't take care of my family. I'm not being heard. I don't have any voice in these industries that you're trying to place me in. So it in one way assists in that.
So I'm going to push back. I'm going to disagree just a moment. I'm going to push back on you, because I do believe opportunity needs to exist, but I don't believe that those opportunities will eliminate the current level of frustration when our young people feel like they're not being heard. In terms of equity, equality, and making sure that this doesn't happen again.
That portion, you're right.
Okay. So do we feel like the city has done enough to make sure that the passion has... Are you still angry?
I think now is coming from the school board position, I'm seeing a lot of anger, because now you got CRT. And I think that
critical race theory, for those who aren't familiar with CRT.
Right. You have that. And that is, we've had young people come to our board meetings, and that is a way for you to start an honest dialogue for some of that frustration that young people are feeling to get out. But now, even with that, it's saying, no, you can't talk about that. You know, and so that part of it, am I angry? Yes, because I think that we definitely need to talk about these issues. We got to talk about them. They're not going to go away. I used to tell my daughter, hey, it's time to clean your room. You need to get it done. But her ideal of cleaning her room was throwing everything under the bed. So I'm like, you didn't clean your room properly, so you got to go do it. And you can't just keep stuffing things. If you continue to fill the garbage can but never throw away the trash, it's going to spill over. And so that's what I think we're starting to see. The garbage is spilling over, and we're just going to have those conversations. And we could keep pushing them back and pushing them back, but eventually we're going to have them. And I think young people are different. It's going to take these young people to really, because they're going to mom and dad now and saying, no, Johnny is my friend. Johnny doesn't look like me, but that's my friend. And so they're starting to intertwine with each other. And we're just going to have true dialogue about why are we angry? Because that's the big thing. Why are we angry? And we need to get to the whys.
Chanel, you wanted to add to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, a year ago, I asked a question because that's when they brought up about the mayor's cabinet. And I said, well, I hope that the people that they selected are people who are, one, active in this community, and then, two, they're ready to make that change. I haven't heard much about the mayor's cabinet or their productivity in terms of community activists, especially young adults. So I think that can kind of be something that was dropped the ball. And then I think there's officers like Officer Payne, who is in the school system. He's active in our community. I think it keeps the connection that this is not two different teams, but that we're all together. So if there was something to deal with the George Floyd thing and to improve our community, it's to continue that connection. Just like over the time, I've learned stuff about the fire department, and I've seen how diverse they've become over these years, and I think that's great information that more people should know about that wasn't previously shared.
So are you still angry?
I am not personally angry, but I do think that the fight is not over. Us growing, us improving our city, it's not over. What we have done so far is a great start, but it's not done yet, so we have to continue to put in work. I think COVID, and then also us, now that stuff has died down, it's not so intensified, we've gotten back comfortable. And so that would be really my thing. I'm not angry, but I think we need to continue and we need to keep the fire burning.
When I was the NAACP president, that's when the mayor started a roundtable. We had not done the Macmillan Center yet. So I was part of that conversation as to what is it that we need to do with the Macmillan Center. But we would meet maybe twice a month, and we would sit down and talk about some of the things that needs to be done in the city. And I got tired of meeting, because I got tired of coming talking about the issues. We knew what the issues were.
Right.
But when are we going to actually do something? And so I really got burnt out going to meetings just to have another meeting. It was a meeting to talk about the meeting we had 2 years ago. Yes, I got kind of frustrated with all that and just like, what am I accomplishing? And my time is so valuable. COVID has taught me to value time. And so I don't know. And just listening to what Chanel said about, I don't know what has happened with I felt that. I felt that same way. Where's the measure? How do you measure the growth? Who's measuring that growth about these meetings that we're having?
Is it something that can be measured? I'm going to let you marinate on that while Nicole gets an opportunity to.
I just wanted to say for students like yourself, they're angry, but they're just like, okay, it's back to status quo. we're not really going to do anything. We got angry. We tore up some things. It's going back to the way it was previously. So there are some people, small pockets, that are angry and they're actually doing something, actually trying to set about a change. But until we actually do something, people are just going to keep saying, gonna get angry and not do nothing.
So there's two things that I wanna explore on that, though, because there are some groups of individuals that are doing a lot of work, and there are two specific people that comes to my mind right now, Daylana and Alicia, that are change makers that are really pushing to hold people accountable, and people are kind of squashing their voice out. So they're doing a lot of work to help change the scenario so it moves from just talking. And there are a number of other groups. There are young professionals at the Urban League that are doing a lot of work so that it just doesn't continue talking. But they're all brown people, all right? And this panel is all brown people, and this audience is made up of a large number of non-brown people. Mm-hmm. So how does the conversation come from us communicating with ourselves to us communicating with
it? I don't know. That's something.
And that's the point of the connection. Just like my sponsors, they're Caucasian, but we can sit down and have great conversations because it's not a race thing or our skin tone. But I think if people see the Urban League and what they're doing, or change makers, and then they connect to that to say, well, I see the impact that you're already doing, but I know the resources I have can take it to this level. Mm-hmm. But you have to be willing to invest in them to take it to the next level and then diversify it to where it's not just the brown people working together.
Okay, so what's the change that we're looking to see? We keep saying if the situation changes, if the conversation changes, we don't want to meet again. And we've met last year, and here we are a year later trying to see how did things change for us personally in our lives and as a city and the whole. Like, I don't know what you want to see. Tell me what you want to see.
You know, for me, I, again, I'm coming from an educational standpoint because I do believe that it all starts with education. And I do mm-hmm. believe that we have got to start with babies. We got to start early. And so one of the things that I have really been pushing with East Allen County Schools, because that's where I serve at, and one of the things that I've been pushing, because you cannot be afraid to have the conversation, is that these classrooms and these buildings have got to reflect the population that's in those buildings. You know, there is a study that children learn better when there are people that look like them, that when they can identify with someone that look like them. And so one of the things that I have really, really been pushing, and I know my superintendent probably think, you know, I really have a distaste, but I really don't. It's just that I'm there, and I have to let that be known that before Fort Wayne Community Schools elected a woman, I was the only black female that was on a school board. And at that time, I was the only black on a school board, period. And so if we're not at the table to bring our issues, how will they know that there is an issue? And so we got to get to the table. And that's one reason why, I mean, when we had this conversation last year, one of the issues that I was advocating for was, at the time, Magistrate Morgan, who was applying for a judgeship.
Yes, you were. Yes,
and
you were.
She didn't get that one. But she is now the first black female judge in Fort Wayne. But we had to.
Positive change.
Yes, that is a positive change. But we had to have the conversation. You could not pretend like everything was okay. We had to have the conversation because even though she will govern or for the people, she still will bring a different perspective to the bench mm-hmm. just by the fact that she is a black woman and have different issues that will affect. Because we have a lot of kids. I was a foster parent for 15 years, and we have a lot of kids in the system that look like me, but there's not a lot of people that foster children that look like me.
Okay, so I want to ask you this question then, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about the change, and I have had this come across my my inbox. George Floyd has brought up forward an awareness of our healing that our country still needs to go through. Mm-hmm. Many people don't feel like there is a problem. I have read emails that say, what do you want? What do you expect? And if you aren't happy, then why don't you just leave our country? Okay? So my question to you is, that comes from a place of our Caucasian brothers and sisters feeling as if their voice is now being muted. Mm-hmm. What do we say to individuals who come and say, in order for you to have the equality mm-hmm. that you're saying you deserve, have worked for and earned, I have to now take a step down from my superiority. How do you respond to that? Nicole, I see you shaking your head.
I say you don't. I was raised in a household of 9 siblings. They're all of us in the same house. We are the same. If you cut us, we all bleed the same. I believe you're not diminished because I'm elevated. Because I get the chance to come to the table and a chance to speak to you doesn't mean that I am making you lesser. We can share this same pie. The pie is big enough for everybody to have a piece. At Ivy Tech, my students, generally I'm the only person of color, and I could be teaching like 30 people in the classroom. I'm the only person of color. So because I'm in this position does not mean that you cannot be in this position. I believe that everybody has a voice, that we are all, I wasn't born any place but right here in America. So I can't go anyplace.
Okay. Chanel? I think when people say that, they don't even see the benefit of diversity. There are things that I've learned from other cultures that I wouldn't have learned in my household or in my community or neighborhood. And so I think even with them, like, it might be easy to say that and you could think, oh, if they just go away, then we don't have this issue. But there will be another issue. It's better to embrace others and learn how they are, no matter if you like it or not, because then you have a better understanding of what makes them them. So that's what I would say.
So what do you say to a Caucasian brother or sister who feels like your rise means that's their demise?
You know, again, I truly believe in conversation. I believe that you got to just communicate. Effective communication, and you have to be honest in your communication. You have to be honest with your communication. Be respectful, but be honest. And I think when we have those two components, then you can solve issues.
But then you have to ask them, if we're both qualified and we both have been offered this position, why would me getting this position belittle you? Why, you think I'm not qualified and you're more qualified than me?
I'm not going up against you, Chanel. You're
right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nicole.
No, I used to say in my classroom when you were talking and you reminded me of what I tell each and every one of my students. If we all brought chicken to the table and we all cooked our most famous version of this chicken, it's going to be different. Your differences add to this table. That's why you're needed at the table. Whether you are black, white, Hispanic, whatever, you are needed. What you say, what you've lived through, all of your experiences, all of you is needed to make me better.
Absolutely.
And all of me is needed to make you better.
Absolutely. I'll ask this question. And I asked it before. I'm going to ask it again until you give me a specific response. What do you want to see changed? So I know for me, I want to see a space created for young adults to be able to say, we asked for these items were met. For example, there was really a great request for the A Can't Wait and the definitions of what the A Can't Wait. Maybe you can't get all 8, but if you can get 5 out of the 8 that can't wait, let's say that's a success. Because our young folks, the folks who are going to be taking care of us in the future, need to be able to have their voices heard. And I think that that space needs to be created. So that's what I know for me that I would like to see. And then I can say, we actually heard our young folks and created that path forward.
You know, for me, I happen to live on the southeast side of town. I love the southeast side of town. I want to see some economic development. I think it's so important that our young folk be able to leave their house, and even if they want to ride a bicycle to their job, that they're able to ride bicycles to their job. We shouldn't have to move in a certain zip code to receive these type of services. For me, with my grandkids, I have to, this summer, they spent a lot of time on the lake in Michigan, because I have friends that have a home in Michigan, and they got to spend time on the farm. So I wanted them to be exposed to all this stuff, but why did I have to take them to Michigan to be exposed? Why can't they have it right when they walk out their door? You know, so I want to see some economic development. I want to look, and when I ride down South Anthony Street, I don't want to see buildings that's all boarded up and homes that, and I know you can't make people cut their grass, but there could be some incentives to make people want to, you know, beautify.
I got a big old smile on my face because I need every single one of y'all to write this down. It's not just Sharon that's saying that. This is the whole, I know y'all get sick of me saying Southeast Economic Development. It's not just Sharon that's saying it. It's a whole community.
I agree with this. She can have all of mine because she's saying everything I want. I want grocery stores. I want housing. I want employment.
Yes.
So I want all of that.
Would that be the positive change from all of this a year later that you would like to see?
Yes. At least a start, some type of start. We don't even have a real sit-down restaurant on the south side of town.
Yep. And can I just say this, Chanel? I'm sorry, take up your time. But because I believe in honesty, and I want to be respectful. But on the southeast side of town, some of our residents, I love our Burmese residents. I love it because it creates diversity in our neighborhoods. But there has to be a certain element of education when it comes to, you know, city limits. So I want to make sure that this is getting out, that no, we can't have goats. You know, we can't have chickens in the city. It's an honest request, and it's true, and we need to talk to them. But how do we get them to the table? How do we bring them in and start having these conversations about, you know, how do we transition in another country?
We'll explore that in just a minute. Chanel?
Okay. One thing that I would say that can go for anyone is being more intentional. If I could say something, I wish that in conversations we have with, you know, your grandchildren, your kids, it's a intentional conversation of letting them know. Because I know, like, just like Burmese, you know, we go out and about and people are different, and kids stare or kids don't understand certain things, but I think it starts at home. I was taught and put in many different places that aren't all the same, that don't have the same audience, and I was taught, you know, how to conduct yourselves. Or even like what we all said about the south side of town, like just being better. I think it's phenomenal how amazing we have expanded and developed downtown, but it's bigger than downtown. And it's bigger than just going to the north side or going to Jefferson Point. We have to expand and develop our entire city so that it's a common ground or a standard that we're going to do for the whole city.
I just want to plug right there that I did not ask them to say that about Southeast Fort Wayne, but it is wonderful
that
they did.
We were not paid to say this.
This part of our show begins the Q&A from the event. And the first question will focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion and critical race theory. Thank you for listening.
I think that goes back to being intentional. Mm-hmm. Our boards and our panels mm-hmm. and the people that you hire for these positions, because I know a lot of people who may be of color and not just, you know, being African-American, you know, they've been to school. They have gotten the qualifications for positions, but they feel like they're not getting these positions. And it could deal with a big thing in Fort Wayne is you know who you know, and that's what connects you to jobs.
Yeah.
But I think if we are being more intentional and hiring people based off their personalities when they're interviewed and the experience that they have in terms of their education and using that more than the, oh, well, this person was connected because they knew this person.
I think one of the first things that we have to look at is making sure that people fully understand what critical race theory is. A lot of people have their own definition of what they believe critical race theory is, and because it's become so politicized, that folks instantly, when you hear it, they want to disagree with it. So I think that's one place we can start.
Because you had brought up employment and making certain that we give the person a chance, there are some people that don't even know that the job is available, so they don't even apply. So in our being intentional in our hiring, we have to be intentional in where we post some of the things that are available. There are some jobs, some of the best jobs you'll ever get to know about, they're not ever posted. It's something that, oh, I got a job, it's making $100,000. Get your cousin to apply, and your cousin apply, and I give them the job. It's a hush-hush thing. So making it where people, that everyone has the chance to apply, would be something that I would look at.
And you know, for me, with CRT, critical race theory, first of all, you're right, you have to find out what is this? What? And I think sometimes when we put a name on things, sometimes that causes an alarm or make your ears stick up. And why is it that we had to say critical? And I think that sometimes that is what is startling to people. It's what we name things. And it's just race. We need to talk about how does that play into how we view each other.
And decisions that are being made.
Exactly.
In private spaces. How does my race play? We kind of said it earlier when, and I've given this example to multiple people, if all things considered are equal, if the skill set, if the talent, if the education, if all are equal and you have two people that have an opportunity, one may be of African-American descent, one may be Caucasian, if all things are equal, then the next question becomes this. Look at your portfolio of employees. If they are all Caucasian, that is when diversity matters. All things are equal, you have an opportunity to add diversity. If you don't give that position to the individual, remember I said all things are equal, to be able to add diversity, you've just closed the door to the opportunity that you had to really, really set a new tone in your organization.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right, next question.
What do you think the outcome would have been if the nation didn't explode into protest? Would Derek Chauvin have been convicted?
No. I'm sorry, I said no. And that is the reality of it. I don't believe he would have been convicted. And it's not that it's you that was sitting on the panel. It's just that I don't believe that he would have even been brought to charges.
Well, I just think the young lady, the woman that recorded the whole issue, you know, I believe that was the change. If she had not recorded that, we wouldn't even know. There would never have been any type of outcry because we never would have known about it. And so it took that woman. No disrespect to you men, but...
But there were a lot of other videos.
That's what I was going to say. Rodney
there
King
were a lot of other videos, right? There were a lot of other videos that were recorded and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of other ones. So why do you think this one was the one?
I think that video made everyone uncomfortable, yes. No matter who you were, no matter your race. Like, yes, the world exploded. Yes, Black Lives Matter became a movement. But I think people of all race thought that's just too far. That video is a little too much for me. It's uncomfortable. And then to see it keep being played over and over again, I think that's why he was convicted. Because not to say they used him as an example, but they had to come to a realization that if we okay this and he gets a not guilty, that is going to open the door to, one, make people feel unsafe with police officers and think no matter what, this can happen again. And then, two, some police officers that may be crooked will think, oh, well, I can do this and keep doing this if they've already been doing it and get away with it, no matter who sees it.
With all that we've already had going on during the time that this took place, with the unrest with President Trump, with the unrest with everything that was going on, I believe that that had a component in it. I believe that the other videos had a component in it. And I believe that the fact that there was a child, that somebody saw that little girl standing there, I think she might have been like, what, 9 or something? I believe all of that, that it was a combination type storm.
I don't know if I can subscribe to that. I'm not sure. right? Because the thing that makes me skeptical is because we've had multiple videos. Mm-hmm. We've mm-hmm. seen black cops get arrested for shooting folks that died. Mm-hmm. But we had never seen, well, I shouldn't say never, it was rare that a police officer would be punished.
Charged and jailed
for the death of a black man. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'll say that it was the video or if it was the uprising, but I will say it was a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't know. I don't know, right? In Chanel's definition, you kind of said, like, it's a small example. I would hope that it was justice served, right?
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. me, I would hope that it was justice served and
like
the evidence
he
went.
He needed more time. Some people thought he needed less.
I don't know. We'll leave that one hanging. Let's leave that one a cliffhanger. Come back on the third year. Yes, ma'am.
Please be specific about the things that people are doing or trying to do that can produce positive change and the things that are producing negative results.
I have one negative result that it just didn't sit right with me. When the movement started and everyone became very exposed about George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter, it made me feel a little uncomfortable that then it became this, well, Blue Lives Matter, and we now support the police department, because I don't think it was ever an attack on the Fort Wayne Police Department. And so that just was something in Fort Wayne. I remember there was a big billboard when you're coming from out west into Fort Wayne, is we support Fort Wayne Police Department. And it's great if you did that before, but it just seemed like the timing of to do it right after everyone is protesting, right after everyone is asking to be treated equally, for you then to say, well, we support the police department. And this was also right after people were bombed, smoke bombed downtown, and there was that major uproar on everything that occurred downtown. So it just was horrible timing. And I don't think it helped to make people feel safe and included.
Thank you for sharing that, because, you know, I never really even thought about it. I didn't notice that all of a sudden there were Black Lives Blue Ribbons flags that were there. So do you think that that was, when you say wrong time, you think it was meant to be offensive toward the movement?
I'm not going to say that they did it to be offensive, because they might have actually felt that way and felt like supporting the police department at the time. But that's why I say bad timing, because everyone was upset with everything that happened downtown, the people who got hurt, maced, charged, all types of things. And then for there to be billboards all across our city saying we support the police department, it just seemed like you also supported what occurred.
So you kind of take it as if to say, if you support Black lives, or if you support the movement, or if you support the protests, then you are automatically deemed to be against the police.
Right. I feel like that's how it was taken.
That's how it was taken.
Even though it wasn't supposed to be that way.
Because and why can't it be both? Right? Why can't I support police officers?
I support police
and
officers.
And still support Black Lives That Matter.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
My point.
I don't have any issue.
Even last year, I don't have an issue with the Fort Wayne Police Department or police in general. I think everyone is individuals and everyone makes choices in this world. And so when you're in a job, you make those choices of how this is going to go. And so I'm not going to be against a group of police officers, because that's like saying I want to be against a group of black people. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not in a category. And so that's why my thing was more of, if you support them, great, because I support them too and what they do and the things that they do in our community. But if you do that, do it all year round. Don't wait for now there's an issue or a conflict and then now you want to post about it, because then it kind of seems like you're going against what everyone else is upset about.
So that kind of feeds back into, if you rise, this falls.
So it's like people thought they had to pick a side, but it wasn't really a side. It was more people saying, I want my voice heard. I want to be treated equally. I want to be valued, because my value doesn't decrease yours. But it seemed that way, like, well, if we're going to go with the people who are protesting, we can't be with the police officers. Or if we're going to go for the police officers and them keeping our city safe, I can't be with the protesters.
Got you. That's good. That's good. Thank you for sharing that.
One of the things that I've seen that's come out of the George Floyd protests is the group that you named, Changemakers, that, and we need different groups. And do some people may not like their approach, but they are being effective.
For those that are not aware, Changemakers is a organization that focuses on diversity, equality within, specifically policing is one of the things that they really focus on. So if there's an issue where they feel like racial unfairness is happening, then they speak to it. They're all over it. And when I've asked the group, like, do you do other things, their focus, them straight to, from their mouths to my ears, their focus is strictly on making sure that there is equity for African-American individuals. So their group focuses really hard on holding everybody accountable.
Yes.
Everybody, yes. Self-included, everybody.
Yes, yes. And because there are some things, like the incident with the young kids over at Wise Park, I never would have known that if Changemakers hadn't brought that to our attention. I didn't know that that had happened over at Wiser Park. But those are, that's, I mean, we do need those type of people in our community to make us accountable and to expose us and make us think that, oh, wow, this stuff is happening and we need to make sure that we are paying attention to things that's happening in our community.
When will we get accountability from our mayor for the arrests made from the protests last year? Do you feel we'll ever get all charges dropped or even a public apology?
Betty? In terms of the public apology, no. They thought the march from the bridge to the courthouse did that. That was our apology, the march.
The mayor thought that?
I think everyone as a whole thought that. They thought if we march and we come together and they see the police officers locked hands with some of the protesters, this is what we need to say, we are one. I'm not gonna say there's an apology because that's not an apology to march, but we are one.
They had a kumbaya moment.
I cannot speak for the mayor, but I can say that because of all kinds of reasons, you probably will not ever get a public apology, the biggest ones being legal reasons. Mm-hmm. So, but then, you know, that's about all that I can say without putting words in somebody's mouth. So I can't speak for the mayor himself, but I would say probably not that way.
Would helping young people participate in organizing to get out the vote campaign be meaningful to them?
I'll let them touch on it, but young folks have to know that you care about their issues throughout the whole time.
Yes.
Because our young people now have become very attuned to the fact that you're just trying to use their young energy when it's mm-hmm. time to get out the vote. So that's the wrong time to try to get young people involved mm-hmm. on a political campaign. I would encourage people not to even ask young folks to walk for them if you don't really already have a heart for young people to get them. Because they're over this whole use me until you can't use me thing and then be done.
Right.
But young folks have the ability to change a narrative like none other and actually have so much energy and excitement. When you give them a reason to get behind you, you don't even have to ask them. They'll just do it on their own.
Me personally, I would not encourage that, but I would encourage educating them prior to some type of vote happening tomorrow. I would have educated them a year ago or 2 years ago of what is going on, and this is where you fit. Because the biggest issue is we don't know where we fit. How does my voice apply to this big conglomerate of things? And if I don't have a voice at the table, does it really matter? So teaching them what matters would be the bigger, the better thing, to make certain that they know where they fit inside society, how they, what expectations are going on for them. That type of thing would be better for them in my mind.
I think it would be better to build the relationships before it's campaign time or before it's time to vote.
Right.
Just like
I don't have to talk to Mrs. Tucker every day, but I have a relationship with her. I vote for Mrs. Tucker. I tell people to vote for her. And it has nothing to do with, you know, me being here right now or any of that, but it deals with her relationship in our community, the heart behind her of knowing who she is, because sometimes it's not, you don't have to know them personally, but them knowing that you actually care and it's more than just receiving a title. I think that will help with the youth.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're more than a vote.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the last question that we have. It says, George Floyd had to die with police in the United States, and African Americans are dying while in police custody. We saw all men on the back and neck of George Floyd. Why is it so hard to pass the George Floyd Act? We saw a murder take place on TV.
The George Floyd Act is, I just saw an email on that today. The George Floyd Act, which is being, I think it's trying to be passed at a national level, but someone sent me an email today wanting it to be passed locally, and they're requesting that in the George Floyd Act that you implement body cams, that you implement police cams, and that you send the officers through a diversity training. And believe it or not, in the city of Fort Wayne, our police force already has all those things implemented. We did implement in 2020, we passed a ordinance where the officers will be equipped with body cams, and those body cams have already gone into place. That was legislation that I brought forward, co-sponsored with Councilwoman Chambers, and the body passed it with all support. So all of the things that are currently being requested in the George Floyd piece of legislation, the city of Fort Wayne is already doing.
Good. We actually have two more questions.
All right.
As a white person from a not diverse zip code, how can I better become educated about issues that are important to the African American community?
I think doing stuff like this, coming to events like this, or one of the greatest things that I seen at Juneteenth that they had in McMillan, there were some people who weren't African-American who came out to support, or some of them even had foster kids or, you know, children with them that might have been a different race, and they brought them to that. So I think there are activities that deal with diversity that you can just expand your horizon and say, oh, well, that sounds like a good event. I'll go, no matter if I know who's going to be there or the audience, and just diversify yourself, because you're sitting next to someone, you might meet a friend, and then now you've diversified yourself from meeting this new person.
I can say, too, like, Black folks are probably some of the most inclusive people that I know. And when you go to events that are primarily African-American, someone is going to wrap love around you. Someone is going to include you into that event because they just see a face that they don't know. And most of our parents have always taught us to befriend folks. So someone's going to wrap love around you. So I would say do that. But I would even go another level and say, be an advocate, right? Be an advocate for you. You've been in places where you've seen African-American people be excluded. Don't be the one that encourages the exclusion, right? Invite your African-American friends. Find out how you can broaden your network and have more diversity of, in true relationships, not just because you want to say, I have a Black friend, but broaden that so that you can have true relationships with people who are of diverse color, so that you can be well-rounded, because there are things about us that are different that we all need to know. A perm for my hair makes it straight. A perm for your hair makes it curly. So there are things that we need to know, but you only know that when you're in relationship with people. So figure out ways that you can authentically and organically broaden your scope of friends. If you can look at your phone book and go, oh, I have one or two, then you don't have enough. You've gotten comfortable in your zone. You've gotten comfortable in your zone.
Right.
Anybody else?
I was just amen in all those things that you were saying.
Being amen, sister.
Being intentional, because it's not just our job to make you feel comfortable. It's your job to come in and say, "Hey, I want to know something. My favorite line was, I have a question. And be ready and receptive to the answer.
Are we in the making of hate crimes law in the state of Indiana? And how soon will we get this?
Hate crime law has to be written from the state level. And there have been multiple attempts by our state representatives and our state senators from Gary, Indiana, Senator Eddie Milton, from, I think it's Michigan City, Senator Greg Porter, Representative Cherish Price. All of them have worked really hard to bring forward legislation to be able to have a hate crimes bill. It has never been able to get out of committee. It always gets to the study. And anybody who knows anything about politics knows if it gets assigned to study, means it won't happen. So they have continued to try to push forward legislation to get at least get a vote on it, but they have been blocked at every door. What change can you make? And literally, like specifically, you see this problem and you're willing to attack, but name them, right? Because if we start putting faces and names on the issues that we see, that invites other people to be able to put faces and names on the issue. So what change do you specifically know you can change and that you're willing to actually commit to doing?
You know, the one of the most segregated places is Sunday morning at church. Those are, and for me and my family, what we did, we are members. We just happen to be believers, and I'm proud of that. So we are members of City Church in Fort Wayne. Chris Freeman is our pastor. And the congregation is made up of people that don't look like us. But what, in terms of change, I think that's where we, again, education, I believe that's the base. But in terms of change, what we did, we connected with City Church, and City Church is doing some phenomenal work in the community. We're going by zip code. And so one of the things that we wanted to do first was tackle the 07. We went into 07, and we're bringing down, trying to tear down those racial barriers that keep us apart. And so we did in 07. Now we have purchased a huge building in the 06 zip code, and we plan to do, I mean, just lots of work in that community. That's one of the areas that is really, really suffering in terms of economics and just education. I think it's one of our higher zip codes of infant mortality. And so we are, that's where I want to see change in these areas, 604, 6806, 07. I really want to see it throughout our city, but you got to start somewhere. And so that's where we're starting, trying to make sure that when you drive into those areas, you don't feel afraid, that you feel welcome, and that there is a place that you can come if you don't live in those communities that have people of color. City Church is going to be one of those churches or places that you can come and learn, because it's really becoming more and more diverse. And so that's a place that you can come. And that's where I'm starting my change. I serve on the school board, so I'm making sure that I hold our superintendent accountable when it comes to recruiting teachers of color, making sure that we're doing all the things necessary to change mindsets.
Okay. Nicole?
My place of change would be, or where I try and enact changes, in my classroom. Being a full-time faculty member at Ivy Tech, I've already explained to you that my class is predominantly like this, with me being the only person of color. I teach on the Fort Wayne campus as well as in Warsaw and YYC. So I have the opportunity to make certain that the hard conversations that need to take place is available to take place, not to accuse or make someone feel bad, but to encourage thought processes. So while these students are in my classroom, I give them the chance to discuss. Ask me those tough questions that you feel fearful of asking someone else. And I'm not going to put you on the spot to make you feel bad. I am going to work with you to give you some understanding. So that's the place where I'm going to continue to do my enacting of change.
I think one of it is my act of change is definitely the places that I go and being loving. I think that's the best way to do it. Speaking to people with a smile on your face. I know we're all wearing masks. We were talking earlier, but they can see the top of your cheeks. Like, yeah. You know, say hello to someone. Give them some encouragement or some love, and it doesn't have to be someone that looks like you. I think that can go a long way and really put joy back in people's heart, because this whole COVID thing, we've been away from everyone and kind of become very introverted, and so it's good to just show love. And then one of the things personally, just being involved in our community, like I am blessed with the opportunity to, you know, be a part of this program and even Leadership Fort Wayne. And like, we're doing a Healthier Moms and Babies partnership where we're going to do a community baby shower. So, you know, once that starts August 28th, that's going to be our way of giving back. And I'm very excited about it because it's my opportunity to do something in our community that's going to help the next generation. Because if I could say there's one goal that I have just for myself is people have invested in me to be where I am. So I want to do the same to the generation behind me and to keep passing that baton to where we all continue to develop and keep having places at tables that we may not be able to usually get in our environments.
And for me, I would like to change the conversation. We always have the conversation of white and black as if those are the only two ethnicities that exist within our community. But our community has Hispanic, it has Latino, it has Burmese. We need to start figuring out how we can not only open up the conversation to include black people, but also to include brown people. Because the thing that we don't want to do is create another hierarchy of divide and another hierarchy of discrimination. So I want to figure out how we can change that conversation so that we can create a community that looks exactly like we say we want it to be. All American, all cities, all lives, all matter. Mm-hmm. Ms. Patty.
Please join me in thanking Sharon Tucker, Paulette Nellum, Nicole Torrey, and Chanel Love in making a great evening for us. Thank you. And thanks to our sponsor, the Journal Gazette.
Thank you, guys.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. The extended version of this program can be found online at WBOI.org or wherever podcasts are found, along with other episodes of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Avow founders Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing the event. And special thanks to Luke Hollinger for providing audio for this program. Our music is by Mark Waldeck, Noah Campodonico, Kurt Remke, and Hope Arthur. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship, Steve Mullaney, Kyle Norbeck, Diamond Thomas, Michaela Veltum, and Sydney Wagner. Until next time, thank you for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.